Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. We are possessive. He joins us weekly. The films are Old Henry, Possession, and Algren. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Oh, I'm swell. This was so easy that I'm wondering if there's an underlying motive.
I know it. You could make a sentence, but not quite maybe a novel out of those three titles.
Not quite. And they could have all been one words except for Old Henry, not just Henry.
Not just Henry. Oh, well. So that's a little variety in today's episode. Two one-word titles and one two-word title. Anyway, let's get to them. This is another week where our theme is to have no theme. These movies really could really not be more different from one another. They're all worth seeing. I think they're all good movies. And I guess my favorite of the three is the very first one, which is called Old Henry, which is written and directed by a pretty new filmmaker named Patsy Panseroli. And Old Henry is a Western. And it is a Western in the old style. Now, not many Westerns get made anymore. Westerns were, my gosh, when I was growing up, Westerns were just such a hugely popular genre, and they were made in Hollywood all the time, and they were made in Europe a great deal, the famous spaghetti Westerns, which were actually mainly made in Spain. And they were all over television. And then sometime in the 70s, the genre just sort of didn't entirely vanish, but it absolutely sort of faded away. And every once in a while, we see a Western. And every once in a while, we see a really old-fashioned Western like Old Henry. And it's refreshing. And Old Henry happens to be a really good example of the breed. I say it's old-fashioned because the story of it is old-fashioned, and the sort of setting of it and so forth and so on is really the kind of stuff that the classic Westerns had many years ago. It is not really old-fashioned. It's not like the 40s or 50s Westerns in that it does have some pretty heavy violence in it, especially as we get near the end. So be warned about that if you're sensitive to that. But then again, that's been the rule with Westerns ever since Sam Peckinpah made The Wild Bunch back in the 60s, and Old Henry is not nearly as violent as that. So, in a lot of ways, it is a throwback to a pretty old style of Westerns. So, Old Henry thrives. It has everything about it is pretty good. Good cinematography, good screenplay, good this and that. But it thrives primarily on the lead performance of Tim Blake Nelson, who's an interesting actor and a good actor. I always think of him mainly in terms of some of the movies he's been in by the Coen brothers, most recently The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, where he plays a pretty memorable character in that. That's kind of an anthology film, and he's certainly not the only interesting actor in that movie. But anyway, and that's another Western, of course. But Tim Blake Nelson is a good and interesting actor, and he is absolutely the heart and soul of Old Henry. I think it's one of the very rare lead roles that he's ever gotten, and he really, really handles it well. So Old Henry is, you guessed it, he's a kind of an old guy, kind of an old coot who lives out in the middle of nowhere, and he started in the Old West, and he starts off the movie by telling us a little bit about how he lived here, and then he lived there, and then he ended up in this place, and he lives there all alone with his young son, who is an adolescent, verging on adulthood, and there they are, and they're having themselves a nice little quiet little life, it appears, and then Old Henry happens to stumble upon a very, very badly injured guy out there in the plains near where he lives, and there's a whole bundle of money that this badly injured man had. So at first, Old Henry just says, I think very sensibly, nope, I'm going to leave it there. I'm getting out of here. I'm not getting involved with whatever this is. But then, no, the temptation comes upon him, and he goes back and he gets the money, and he brings the badly injured person back to his own little house and sort of nurses him back to health. Well, now this sets up the first big question of the movie. How about this badly injured person? Who is he? And is he going to trust Old Henry, who now has him in his house, and by the way, ties him to a bed because old Henry doesn't trust the badly injured guy. Little by little, the badly injured guy gets less injured and starts to regain his strength a little bit. And again, there's the big standoff. Are old Henry and the badly injured guy going to trust each other? And then who is it who injured the guy? And then those people show up. And oh, they appear to be a pretty mean bunch. So now we have old Henry and the guy he's rescued and is still not sure whether he should trust. And we have the people who injured that person. And some of them are claiming to be sheriffs and others, them obviously not sheriffs. And things move on from there. So there's a lot of suspense in old Henry. There's a lot of sort of human interest because it's largely a question of who do I trust? Can I afford to trust this person? Am I putting myself in terrible danger if I trust this person? And so forth and so on. And then somewhere around three quarters of the way through the movie, there's a big twist. We find out that Henry is not the old guy who we thought he was. He's actually some totally different person who most of us have heard of at one time or another. And that leads us into the last part of the movie. And that makes the movie more traditional than ever, because again, it's somebody we've heard of before in other Westerns, if we've ever seen Westerns in our lives. So again, old Henry, I think, is a very, very well-made movie. It's beautifully done. I think it sort of loses its charm, if that's the right word for it, in the last part when it starts to get more violent and more sort of shoot 'em up kind of action. But most of the way, it's a really interesting character study of this figure, very, very beautifully and subtly played in a lot of ways by Tim Blake Nelson. There's a terrific supporting cast, and I just had a good time watching it. So if you're in the mood for an old Western, or even if you aren't, for an old fashioned Western, I should say, check out Old Henry. It's a new old-fashioned Western, and I really did have a good time watching it. And it certainly suggests that Tim Blake Nelson is capable of things that, well, I didn't really think he was capable of. And he handles this lead role, really carries the movie, although the movie has a lot of other excellent elements as well. And I just had a nice time with it. And it's fun to have a sort of nostalgic old-fashioned Western once in a while. Our second movie today, as warned before, Jill, this is totally different, couldn't be more different, starting with the fact that it comes from 1981. This is a movie which is being revived now. It's been redone, restored to its original splendor with a great 4K restoration, which just means that it's going to look terrific on the video projection as well as the old-fashioned film type of production. And it's a movie, again, that was made back in 1981 by a filmmaker named Andrei Zulovsky. Quite a well-known filmmaker, at least to movie buffs. He originally came from Czechoslovakia and Poland, and he studied filmmaking in France, and he worked for a while for the very, very great Polish film director Andrzej Wajda, and then he started making his own movies along the way, and he made a whole lot of movies over a whole lot of years of activity. And the thing to know about most of the films of Andrzej Zulovsky is that they are crazy. Andrzej Zulovsky is a filmmaker who has based a very major career on making movies which are berserk. And I have to say, I have mixed feelings about a lot of his work. I'm very interested in cinema that takes risks, and his movies always, always, always take tremendous risks. But then again, sometimes his risks don't really pay off, and I get really tired of them after a while. One of his most famous movies is a French movie called That Most Important Thing, Love. And it's basically a kind of a love story, but oh, it is just so berserk. He made a science fiction movie called On the Silver Globe, a very, very long movie, which he was never allowed to finish. The Polish government pulled the plug on the whole thing and destroyed the costumes and sets, and you can still see that movie pretty easily. It's on YouTube, but it's basically got a whole lot of missing scenes, which are filled in with voiceover narration. So that's the kind of thing, the kind of career that he had before his death a few years ago. He directed these crazy movies full of tremendous risks. Sometimes the risks paid off. Very often they didn't. He was very often in trouble with the kinds of people who help you get your movie made, the authorities and the funders and so forth. But he managed to make quite a few feature films, and one of the very best known of them is Possession, which again has now been revived and is coming to theaters again in this newly restored form. So what is Possession about? What is this Possession that we're hearing about? about. Well, it's not 1,000% clear, to tell you the truth, but it's basically a story of a marriage that has gone horrifyingly bad from the very beginning. We have a couple played by wonderful actors, Sam Neill, terrific actor, Isabel Adjani, terrific actor, and the two of them are married to each other, and they are just at each other's throats, so to speak, right from the very beginning of the movie. They really don't get along. She's leaving, he's leaving, he's horrible, she's horrible, he's totally unfair and miserable, she's totally unfair and miserable, etc., etc. And by the way, the movie is about 2 hours long, and that's pretty much the tone of it throughout. However, what we get are these incredibly over-the-top sort of semi-insane performances throughout. The movie is strenuously bizarre, strenuously crazy from start to finish. And it gets even more so when, somewhere along the way, it turns into not just a psychological horror movie, but a horror movie, because there turns out to be a monster in Isabel Adjani's home that she has gone to live in. Now, it is never 1,000% clear whether the monster is a product of her own tormented imagination, her own tormented soul, her own tormented psychology, or whether it really exists in the same world that we all live in, but it does seem to be capable of killing people, and we see it there on the screen from time to time, and it's a pretty horrific-looking monster, created, by the way, by the great movie monster specialist Carlo Rambaldi. And it's just really, that sends the movie into a whole new level of insanity and neurosis and psychosis. So, that's what Possession is. If you want to see a movie which is obsessive in every sense of the term, but which is also graced by these two terrifically energetic performances by two really, really excellent actors, then by all means, check it out. If you like horror movies, check it out. If you like stories about tormented, over-the-top lunatic psychology, check it out. It's an interesting movie. I got really tired of it after a while, and oh my gosh, I like horror movies, but this is not exactly the horror movie, the sort of horror movie I like best. But again, if you're interested in something really different and really obsessive, and especially if you have ever run across the or are interested in sampling the work of Andrzej Żuławski, check it out. A very, very interesting movie, if not exactly a likable one. And our third movie for today, again, totally different from the other two, Algren. This is a documentary made by Michael Kaplan, and as one may suspect from the title, it is a documentary about the very fine American writer Nelson Algren. Now, he is best known for his movie The Man with the Golden Arm, which was also made, by the way, into a fabulous movie by Otto Preminger back in 1955. Algren didn't like the movie at all. He didn't think it was true enough to his novel, but hey, okay, I really think it's a great movie. And I also really like the novel. I've read The Man with the Golden Arm more than once. I think it's a terrific novel. It's a brilliant novel in some ways. And it's Algren's best-known achievement. He wrote other novels, too, particularly A Walk on the Wild Side, which was made into a very bad movie back in the early 60s, and some other things along the way. But he was one of these hard-boiled writers. He was a writer, this is me speaking now, not all critics would agree, but sort of on the order of Raymond Chandler or James M. Cain. But he really, really, really dealt with the dark side of society, the people who just have nothing and are probably never going to get anything. And he was fascinated by them and treated them in very compassionate ways. Interestingly, he had some real success in his career. The Man with the Golden Arm was the winner of the very first National Book Award. The novel came out in 1949, and the first National Book Award was given in 1950, and there he was. He was rising as a really, really major American writer, but he did not manage to keep that momentum going. And along the way, he had various failures, and he ran out of money and lived in poverty for a while, and et cetera, et cetera. So he himself had a very dramatic life. But above all, the main thing about him is that he kept up this constant fascination with and compassion for the most dispossessed of American citizens. His city was Chicago, where he lived for most of his life. And he knew those people, and he knew the most underprivileged and deprived of those people, and was fascinated by them, and spent a lot of time with them, and wrote about them a lot, fiction and nonfiction. And that's that's really what his career was all about. One more little aspect, which is covered in the documentary Algren, is that he had a longtime passionate love affair with the French intellectual writer Simone de Beauvoir. Interestingly, one of the premier original feminists of the 20th century, and he had a longtime affair with her, which did not turn out very well, and that's all covered in the movie as well. Algren is a hyperactive documentary. It is constantly jumping from one thing to another. Much of the story is told through photographs. He had some photographer friends, particularly a photographer named Art Shea, and the movie is overstuffed with these photographs, plus talking head interviews with people, most of them very brief, little snippets, little clips. You really have to pay attention because this movie is always leaping from one thing to another. But if you're interested in American literature, if you're interested in the hard-boiled sort of American writer that Nelson Algren was, if you're interested in 20th century social and cultural history, then Algren is just a fascinating movie to watch. I don't think it's a great documentary. It raises some questions it never answers. But along the way, I just had a good time watching it. It's a little under an hour and a half long. It is jam-packed with action and images and a lot of good jazzy music as well. So again, if you're interested in literary documentary or in documentary just generally, then Algren is definitely a movie to see. I certainly had a good time watching it. So that is my very, very jumping all over the place, hard-boiled story this week, Jill.
Three for three. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Old Henry, Possession, and Algren.